Welcome to Popular Cultural Cherry. My name is Lawin and I am your host. In this podcast, we give you an outsider's perspective about European life, culture, and pretty much anything that is connected to this continent. So get ready to learn something new in a light and entertaining way. Welcome back, everyone, to Popular Cultural Cherry. This week, we have Till Carlos as our guest. Till is originally from Northern Germany. By profession, he is a computer programmer and has a long history of being an entrepreneur as well. For the last decade or so, been living the digital nomad life, which means he's been living around the world, mostly between Asia and Europe. In this episode, he's going to give us a preview into his life as a digital nomad, what got him started into this lifestyle, the different experiences he's had as a digital nomad, the advantages and disadvantages of them, and so on and so forth. So as always, let's go straight into the interview with Till.
Till, thanks for joining us today. What was it, last week, 2 weeks ago? I was a guest on your podcast, so you have your podcast. And now it's my turn to ask you the questions.
That's perfect. And I think your podcast is actually a much better fit than mine, but it's a pleasure for me to be here. And I think it's an interesting topic. So yeah, let's go into it.
Yeah, that's good. And obviously the topics typically of my podcast are about, you know, Europe and Asia. And you're a good example of doing it the other way around. A lot of people I interview are people from Asia who moved to Europe. And now I get to interview you, who's someone in between in the digital space. So something that's pretty new for a lot of people, for a lot of traditional companies. So yeah, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your story and what led you to do business in Asia and live somewhere in between Asia and Europe.
Yep, sure. Maybe as a general overview. So I'm 37 now, and now it's 2021. So I'm born 84. And basically my life is split into two parts. You can say when I was 28, I decided to get out of Germany. And then my second part of the life began. And I kind of felt I had to make different mistakes, but again, a couple of mistakes before I got somewhere where I saw some light. So yeah, so the first part of my life, mostly in Germany, I programmed software since I'm 16. I studied computer science, and at the same time founded a company to do software development. And we had some bigger clients like the Wacken Heavy Metal Festival or some startups, got to a team about 8 people. And I just finished my studies. And then I was 28 and I just saw I don't want to live in Germany anymore. And I don't know exactly where the feeling came from, but I think it was a weird feeling of unrest or unrestfulness that I couldn't really solve by traveling within Germany. I thought, there was something more to life. I closed my company. I wanted to hand it over to my partner. He then said I would also just close the company and open a new one. And that was fine with me. We found a good solution for everybody. And then I just left and went to Asia. And it was where the second part of my life began. And that's probably what you want to talk about most, I guess.
Yeah. Let's go back a bit to your pre-28 life, right?
Sure.
So you finish a technical course, very German. But what I don't find very German is, like, you started your own company. I don't see a lot of, like, the young guys doing this. How was that like during that time when you were starting a company? Was it common, or was it...
That's an interesting question. I think I was totally oblivious of that. The only thing I really remember was that I was... When I started, it was 2006. I studied computer science. Yeah, so basically, I worked in Australia in 2006, around 3 months, and I came back from Australia because I thought I wanted to study computer science. I think it was like 2 weeks into the studies, and I saw the curriculum and I saw the time commitment needing to be involved in order to study. I just noticed that this was not a full-time job. There was no way I could only do this for the next 5.5 years. I was 22 back then. Yeah. So when you're 22 and you look into 5 years into your future, that sounds like a long time. That's crazy long. And I was thinking, okay, that's no way I'm just going to do that. So I thought I'll just found a company. I'd had some idea, and that was where it started. Founding a company in Germany back then, I had really no idea if that was common. I didn't have any friends who were doing that. And I was just calling up an old friend who I vibed with, And I just told him, hey, I met you at a party and you're a nice guy. So how about we just do something together? And we didn't really knew what we were doing. But like in terms of opening a company, I can talk a lot about this in Germany, if that's of concern, if that's like where you're asking about the bureaucracy and everything. Or
No. Just about the experience of how, I just wanted to know like how it was like during that time, if you got a lot of friends of yours or people from your circle who were actually also starting businesses, not the process in general, because I think that's for another topic.
Yeah, it's a huge topic. No, I think we were the first, but in my circle, yeah, in the studies, there were, so I actually founded two companies. And one was, yeah, one was with three other friends and one was with one other friend. And the company with the three other ones, we wanted to build something like Basecamp, like software as a service. And I just got out of that very fast. I think after half a year, I noticed that it wasn't a people fit. I had some friends who were doing similar things, but I think we were still the first ones. And later on, and as my studies progressed, or even after my studies, I think there are a handful of people opening their own companies. So when I now visit my hometown, there are at least 4, 5, 6 friends who are now running as successful entrepreneurs. So that's actually quite cool to see.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Actually, the reason why I asked that question is, it piqued my interest. I recently finished watching this Netflix series. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Billion Dollar Code. And it's actually about those two German guys in Berlin in the 90s, I think, who founded supposedly Google Earth. And then it's a 4-episode story. It's about, of course, their whole experience, but also touched on like entrepreneurship at that time in Germany, which is kind of non-existent. So I was just trying to... Yeah. Understand. And also when I talk to people, at least here in Aachen, a lot of them, you know, their goal is always to join big companies. So I'm not really sure if like there's this entrepreneurial spirit going on, especially like for the people studying like technical courses. So just out of curiosity and out of this recent Netflix series I've seen.
That's actually, as you mentioned, that series. It's on my list. I use Notion quite a lot for my personal life. And I have this one file called Shopping List, and there is all the series I want to watch. And normally I just download them right before I fly. I'm on an international flight, so I have like 10 episodes to go through. So, but this is on the list. I would like to watch it. Yeah, it sounds super fun. There's also a movie called 23. I think that's also a similar theme. You might want to enjoy that. Yeah.
I'll check it out as well. So another question I wanted to ask you. So during that time before you were 28, so you said you lived in Australia for a bit, but did you also travel a lot to Asia or outside of Europe, outside of Germany? Or did you have a lot of international friends that maybe piqued your interest towards leaving Germany?
I didn't have any of that, no. What I have to say, I think that's true in general in life. And I see this in many people, and for me, definitely true, is that life is about becoming more of yourself. And for me, I mean, everybody has this operating system inside themselves, and you have to figure out how it works. So what I noticed, actually, when I was 28, I was looking at my life, and I noticed that I was just in my city, which is super small. I noticed that I moved. Every year, I moved once or twice. Why is that? What makes you move inside your city? There's not a big reason for that. You find a good flat and then you stay in there, right? And also, I went to, during my studies, I went to Peru. Okay, so I can give you an example, right? So my name is Carlos. So I wanted to learn how to say Carlos, right? So like with a Spanish. So I wanted to figure out. Yeah. And I thought, this is like a bummer that I cannot speak Spanish. And then I thought, okay, how do you learn Spanish? Okay, you get a private teacher. Okay, good. Where are the cheapest private teachers? I don't know. South America. Okay, good. Yeah, so I would go to South America. Okay. Then I booked a flight to Peru. I had someone where I can live for free, so it was good. And then after that, I came back and I spoke a bit. And then I went to Spain and studied in Spain for half a year. And those things, I didn't really have any kind of example or something. It was just came out of an urge that I wanted to go somewhere and do something. And with Australia, it was the same thing. I wanted to get an internship in Dublin because I was listening to this Irish music all the time. And I thought it would be cool to be in Dublin. So I sent like a couple of cold emails to entrepreneurs in Dublin. And back then I didn't know cold email really well. And one turned me down and the other ones didn't even respond. And then out of the blue, someone from another contact invited me to Australia. And I thought, okay, cool. Australia sounds even more fun. In summary, for me, it was just always having an idea and then going for it. There was nobody really showing me, yeah, this is how you could do it, or this is how other people do it. It always came from me. But that's just my story. You know, I think also I might be older than many of your audience. So I would say now there are many more examples out there. You can go, you can just type in digital nomad and you get overwhelmed with thousands of results. Back then, there was nobody, right? So it's a bit of a different age now, I would say.
Yeah, but that's what makes your story interesting, is because you did it before. I think honestly, like, your whole story, we've been speaking for 10 minutes, your whole story kind of proves only one thing, that you got big balls, man, compared to a lot of people. Like, you just have this goal. Like, I want to learn Spanish, I'll fly to Peru. I want to work for an Irish company, I'll fly to Australia. Like, crazy, man. I would never have thought of this. Like, I guess one thing I want to know is, like, what did your friends and family say whenever you had these urges, like, oh, I'm flying to Peru next week to learn Spanish. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to Australia for a couple of months. Like, were they kind of like shocked, or like, were they, or that's like a really you kind of thing to do? Mm-hmm. And like, oh, they're not even surprised that you do it.
Yeah, they were not surprised at all. And that's probably contrary to what I hear from a lot of people. We once shot this documentary called Your Own Way Out. And if you go there, we are remodeling the website now, but there was basically a documentary of 1 hour you can download. And we interviewed, I think, 20 successful entrepreneurs. And many of them told us that they were held back by their peer group. They said, you can never do that and whatever. For me, it was totally different. Everybody supported me. There was nobody who said, Atil, you will fail or something. I was, it's going to be fine. You know, he's coming back or he's not coming back. Doesn't matter. But he'll be fine. I don't know. It's just my experience.
That's cool, man. That's cool. Also, when I moved to Germany, I'd say it's a bit split. Like, the people really close to me believed in me, but some of the people kind of further up were like, why? Like, what are you going to do there? Like, you don't even speak the language, right? Whatever. So I think there'll always be these kind of people around you that will support you and people who don't. But I'm happy that everyone kind of supported you, or maybe because they knew you, that like, oh, whatever, you'll be fine wherever you go.
Let me ask you, are you still friends with those people who...
Yeah, sure.
Who even the ones who said you won't make it?
Yeah, you just have to prove them wrong. And then you might even be able to influence them to move as well. Mm.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
You were talking about, you know, you being a pioneer, sort of a pioneer for this digital nomad lifestyle.
True.
Maybe you could tell us a little bit. Maybe you could continue that story of yours after you're 28 and you reaching that title of digital nomad.
I think I was actually interviewed by some German magazine where I was just visiting back in my hometown, and they took a picture of me standing with a laptop in the middle of a street somewhere surrounded by traffic. They sent a photographer and wrote an article about me. And
wow.
I think I must have been, I wouldn't say I was the first digital nomad from Germany, but definitely one of the first couple of them. But yeah, how it continued. So when I got out of my company, the first thing I did, I went to Bavaria. So that sounds like a foreign country, but it's actually a part of Germany.
Well, the German there to me sounds a bit more foreign. So it's also, to me, feels like a foreign country.
Yeah, but it's actually beautiful. That's a fun thing, is wherever I go, I yet have to find a place that's more beautiful than Bavaria. There's an area called Allgäu. It's in the south of Munich. It is so stunning. It's really, really beautiful. That was one of these things where I was somewhere in Hamburg at my ex-girlfriend's place, I think. And I saw this video of, if I can recall it, if things was a video of Doppler on Vimeo. And that was a speed gliding video. That's like speed gliding. You know what paragliding is, right? So you have a parachute and a backpack and you run off a cliff and you fly you glide and you can go upwind. You can go into upwinds and then you can basically go for hours, so you can also go down quite fast. And it's very dangerous. So anyway, but there was a video which was speed gliding. So it's a combination of paragliding and skiing. And I watched this video, I don't know, 100 times. And back then, I was already in the process of getting out of my company. And I just knew I had to learn that. And I knew I wanted to learn flying. I didn't care about skiing so much, so I wanted to learn to fly. And then I just booked that course in the south of Germany. And that served two purposes. The one thing was I had something to do while my partner was basically dismantling the company. And I still have to commend him on that. He did a great job and he was like the nicest person ever. I wouldn't have assumed that as someone who basically gets out of a company and then everybody being so nice to them, right? But yeah, so he was dismantling the company and I took this course of learning to paraglide. And it was the same thing. I just watched something and I thought, okay, I'll go on Google. Okay, paragliding Germany. I found this company and I just went there. I booked a hotel next to it, next to the school. And then I just sat there in a course. And it was really expensive. It was like, I think the glider was 6,000 euros or 8,000 euros. And then the school was 2,000. So it was like 10,000 euros right there.
What?
Yeah, that's expensive. But in the end, you have a really good education there. And then I took 70 flights and I got my license and I could fly. Yeah. Wow. So anyway, that was the first step because also I wanted to be there for them, right? So I didn't know you cannot just go to Asia and leaving everybody like this. So I thought, okay, at least I'm in the same country and I'm there. There's something needing to be done. Okay, that was the first step. And then I saw, okay, that kind of works. How it then proceeded from there was I listened to a podcast. The name is The Tropical MBA. And I can recommend everybody to listen to that. It's a great show, basically about location-independent entrepreneurship. And there was an interview by this guy, Jimmy Hayes. He made a backpack called Minal, M-I-N-A-A-L, minal.com. It's like digital nomad backpacks, basically. And I listened to that podcast and I just emailed him and I told him, hey, dude, this is like an amazing thing that you're doing. And we just emailed back and forth and talking about backpacks. And then I told him, hey, and I had this idea of making a community online for digital nomads. And this guy emails me back and says, like, dude, this already exists. Don't do it. Don't make it your own one. Just join us. Right? And I said, really? That does exist? What's this? Yeah. And then he invited me to the Dynamite Circle. And it's a really cool community and they have some access restrictions. So you have to be an entrepreneur. You need to make at least $5,000 per month. Yeah. So I bought the subscription. It costs money. And then this founder emails me back, say, hey, Till, welcome. Welcome. Great. Cool that you join. We also have this conference. It's actually in 1 month. So I would recommend you to book it right now and book a flight. And yeah, then I just booked a one-way ticket to Thailand. And then I left like a month later. It was 2013.
Oh, damn. Just that fast? Couple of email exchanges, put in the money, one-way ticket. Wow. That's crazy, man. Oh, admirable. Yeah. Like, I really... Wow, that's cool. Super cool.
I had no idea what I was doing, to be honest. But I had this conviction that is all going to be all right. Because for me, I mean, I have built my first company. It wasn't an exit, but I had money saved and there was some money left from selling the inventory and so on. So it wasn't that I wasn't in a bad shape, also financially. And I had some conviction that I'm going to figure things out. And that's why it was kind of easy for me to leave. But I noticed much later that it was actually very hard to do that lifestyle. And I think it took me, after leaving 2013, it took me 3 years before I really arrived on the global, on the globe, let's say.
So the nice thing is that you had finished a course or a your education in something mm-hmm. that is very,
right.
at that time and until now, is in demand. That's something that there's a lot of premium put in people with that skill. So I think in general, like people with your skill set, more or less would be pretty good anywhere they go. But you said that it took you 3 years to kind of get to where you wanted to be. So what did you actually do in those 3 years? Were you in Thailand or were you moving around?
So I went to Thailand, I think. So I first got a Thai visa. Yeah, I think there was a weird action of like 1 week or one weekend. I got my flight license. I packed my stuff. I drove to Hamburg. I got my visa for Thailand. I just put the car into the next to the house of my parents. I just left it all there, basically. And I took the flight to Thailand. And in Thailand, I suddenly was in a room with another entrepreneur who's and we were chatting, and this guy's like lying on the bed with his MacBook Air, and he's like, "Oh yeah, I just uploaded my 400th app on the App Store." I was like, "What the fuck is going on? This is like out of this world." I had no idea what was going on because it was a new world to me. I knew how to build software, but I didn't know you could upload 400 apps into the App Store. I was not really looking too much into those things back then, into like creative entrepreneurship or creative ways to make money. But yeah, why? You asked me why it took me 3 years to accept.
What did you do for those 3 years? And then, yeah. So you went to Thailand and then you were...
Yeah, so I went to Thailand. I had a visa for 6 months, but in that visa, you have to get out after 3 months. So I went out after 3 months. And from that community, the Dynamite Circle, a couple of people were going to Vietnam. And then I also went. That was basically it. And then in Vietnam, I think that this, I give you the short story because the long story is, I met a girl very early on, and then she taught me Vietnamese and I taught her German, and it was great for a year. And then we decided to marry, which was too early, and then it didn't work out basically. But also, if I look at myself, to be really totally honest with me, that time with that girl was just me not accepting that I could totally be totally fine without having anything. That was like the big learning for me, because back then I was clinging to something I didn't even know I needed. So that I was clinging to something that I thought I would need in order to have a life, but I didn't need that. So in that case, it was that relationship, or it was some kind of purpose or some kind of plan, right? It was something like, yeah, and then we marry and whatever, and then there was a plan for that. And just after the divorce, I really noticed that you don't need a plan. You just need a worthy goal. You know, that was my thinking. I was always thinking like a German in plans. And I think in 2016, I just got rid of that. And after that, life got so much better.
You ended up staying in Vietnam and probably starting your own company there, or?
No. I never started a company in Vietnam, and I don't want to do that right now. I actually only been in Vietnam as a visitor, to be honest. Yeah, just as a tourist. And I've never stayed a full year in Vietnam. I never got any kind of real residency, and yeah, but what I did do was learn the language. That was the big thing that kind of kept me engaged. And of course, I like the culture, but I also like my independence. So opening a company in Vietnam is fine for people who want to do business there, but I just wanted to be free, and I always knew I want to be a global citizen now.
So right now, or at least from that time until today, mm-hmm. would you actually call any place home?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. No, actually, I don't. I would say my final destination is Vietnam. I would say when people ask me, I tell them, just to keep it simple, I'm the guy who lives in Vietnam. I tell them that because that's an easy story to get, and there's an easy tag, and that's right, I'm yeah. totally fine with that, right?
Right.
It gets more complex as you go into the details. So I don't really have any place that I would call home, to be honest. Yeah.
Wow. And you wouldn't also say that you spend most of your time in a particular place. It's just like what you want when you feel you fly there.
So that's the thing. I can say I feel at home in a certain city. And there are a couple of cities. For example, it's Valencia in Spain where I lived. It is Hamburg. It is Berlin. It is also Saigon. And it is Tbilisi in Georgia as well. And it is Sofia in Bulgaria. So these are all places where I would say I know people there. I could easily spend years there if I wanted to. And I've spent a lot of time in those cities.
So you kind of hop around between these cities?
Yes. Yes, because...
That's typically your schedule.
Yes. I think life always surrounds this topic of first you expand in, like you try to figure out what you want. You go into the broth. And you're trying to find multiple options and see what's out there, right? And once you have like a good sample set of experiences or knowledge about a topic, then you go deep into something. Yeah. I think that's like a general thing. There are principles in programming that do the same thing. For example, MapReduce is like a database. It's like an idea of how you handle data. Mm-hmm. That's something that works in the same principle. First, you get all the different things you could get, and after that you select. Yeah. So I feel like I've been in that process. I've tried a couple of businesses, and I know which ones interest me. and I've seen a lot of places, and now I know which ones interest me. So now I don't want to have broader experience. I don't want to have more experiences. I just want to have deeper experiences. Does it make any sense to you?
It does. It does. It just reminded me of advice I got when I was younger about dating. I don't know if my mom gave it to me or a friend gave it to me, but they would say, like, you know, collect, and then select.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
It was dating advice, though. I don't know who gave it to me, but it kind of reminds me of your train of thought, like what you were just describing.
It is exactly the same thing with dating. There's actually a TED Talk out there. I don't know if I could even find it, but their notion basically said that you should date at least 7 or 8 people, and after that you have a good chance of finding the one that fits best. But if you only date 1 or 2 people, you have a big chance of just finding someone who's not resonating really well. And if you still go with that person, then you might miss out on like the big love that you could have gotten.
Deep, man. This is getting deep. What do you see as the advantages and disadvantages of being a digital nomad like you are?
Oh, there's a lot. Give me like can you narrow it down to some kind of area?
Okay. Let's put it like this. In terms of how do you make your like financial strategy work as a digital nomad? Mm-hmm. And also about like maintaining relationships, not just like romantic relationships, but having like a set of friends, or you know what I mean, like a circle.
Okay, I think those are probably the most. Yeah, there are a lot of areas in life, but those are very, very interesting ones. Yeah. Okay. So for the finances, as a digital nomad, you basically have two choices. You either, and this is probably the same as if you're locally somewhere, you're either an entrepreneur, or like self-employed, or you run your own business, or you are employed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you got to figure out first. Either has different strategies. Yeah. So okay, let's just do it systematically. let's look into entrepreneurship first, and then I get to employment later. Let's say you're the entrepreneur type,
right?
And then let's look into digital nomad and local. Okay. So digital nomad means you have to make money, basically online. Or in some kind of remote way. Yeah, there are certain business models that don't work anymore. So, for example, if you're remote, you cannot open your own coffee shop. That just doesn't work, okay? So you have to decide on a business model. It's very simple. You have no geographical boundaries. That also means that nobody else has them, right? Let's just assume you make an e-commerce store. Everyone can do that, right? Let's say you make a blog about what did I learn today, like... a gossip website where you monetize with ads, right? For example, right?
Right.
So you're doing that, but everyone could do that. There could be someone with super low living standards doing the same thing. And as they have so low living standards, now suddenly they would be able to have much more runway than you. Okay. So that's what you got to figure. So figuring out what business model you want to do. And that already can take years. For me, it took years. But anyway, so your business model is you have different choices. Okay, how to make the finances work? Okay, let's just look at a business. Okay, business model, and then business model to a local entrepreneur. You have more choices with a business model if you're locally, because you can do all the things that you could do remote.
Yeah,
you can.
Yeah, definitely.
And on top of that, you have access to a local market where you can meet people face to face. So, for example, what I tried was to make a marketing agency remote. And that's probably the stupidest idea ever, because you want to build trust with clients who are wiring a couple of thousand euros to your bank account every month. And it's much harder to sell that online than to sell that face to face. That's a world of difference between that. So that stuff that I totally underestimated that. I thought it's easy, and I saw some success stories from other people doing that. But actually, it proved to be very hard to pull that off. So when you're a local entrepreneur, you can just basically, let's say you do marketing services, because that's just a very generic thing that a lot of people are probably thinking about. You can just knock on doors and say, hey, I'm Till. I live next door or down the street, and I can do Facebook ads, and let us work together. That's a way easier sell than someone who suddenly appears in a YouTube ad that you click away. Okay, so that's one thing I would just if that's interesting for your listeners, look into that before you start anything of that. Look into where you can have your advantage. What else we got? So the business model, then finances, any kind of setup that you have in terms of tax, in terms of company, it is harder online. So for example, if you have any kind of, sometimes banks want to see you for a signature for a credit card.
Okay.
And you're local, you just go to the bank in the next branch, right? So I had a friend who flew took a cross-continental flight because he got a new, you know those thingies where you type in your PIN?
Oh, yeah.
The bank?
Yeah.
The battery battery ran out, and then he had to fly in order to pick up a new PIN card. Shit like that happens, right? Yeah. I had it happen to me as well. I also had not that hard, but I got something delivered to Thailand, and I couldn't pick it up because of COVID. No, and then I had to reapply and had it shipped to another country, and then I had to pick it up. So those things happen. Okay, so on the finance side, that's definitely all these things are much harder when you're remote, when you're a digital nomad. No, for the advantages in this regard is, and I'm just talking about entrepreneurship, right? Okay, this is also affecting employment, but the living cost can be cheaper if you're in a cheaper country. So let's say if you go to Thailand, you might be able to cut your living cost by half. And then it's just a matter of how often you fly. I can give you a bit of a number because I just have it in my head. I spent 19,000 euros in 2017, and I flew between Thailand, Vietnam, and Bulgaria. And I was living on the cheap. I was paying for the bare minimum. So I wouldn't live in hostels all the time. So I wouldn't go complete backpacker, but I would be in like the cheapest hotel, the cheapest Airbnb. I would probably eat out a lot, but not fancy food. And that cost. And this is for like a living standard that I deemed acceptable. So yeah, a bit less than 2,000 per month. So probably $2,000 per month. And that's, I would say, it was a bare minimum. And you also have to factor in all the flights, right? So that was like the total spent. So maybe you think you can get away with 1,000, but then you have to buy an international flight for 1,000. How often can you do that? So for the living cost, I don't know, you shouldn't get distracted by low living cost because there are also flights and some other things you might need. Okay, so that was the finance side. Is there more questions? Otherwise, I would go into relationships.
No, this is interesting for me. Let's go into relationships because that's...
Okay.
Because when you travel so frequently,
When
you have your head on your business and you're traveling so frequently, you're meeting with your clients online, different time zones or whatever, how difficult is that then to like have these like really close people to you and have contact with them?
For that, the thing that helped me a lot was this Dynamite Circle, where I made a lot of friends there. And they are all like this. So when you are, and I think it all aligns around this a bit. Once you travel a lot, then suddenly relationships, they change a bit. So you're able to make connections faster. And also people you meet, they're also receiving you faster. They let you into their circle faster because they know they would have the same position once they switch the country. It wasn't really hard for me because I had the personality already. But I know people who didn't have that personality, who needed strong bonds, and then they weren't able to do that lifestyle and they basically stopped after half a year or so. Yeah, so in order to still have stable relationships, what I do is I call a lot of people on a monthly basis. So I just have a call with them. And after the call, I just ask them, hey, do you want to schedule your next one? Yep, let's do it. And then I'm just very chill and ask, shall we do like 4 weeks or 6 or 8 weeks? What do you think? And I just see what happens. And they say, yeah, let's do it in 2 weeks or so. That was fun. So you can figure out how often people want to see you. And then you just have another call. And I built great relationships with that. And then once in a while, I meet them in person at a conference or in some country. So that's the one thing I do. And the other thing that I do is I have a list of people I want to see when I'm somewhere. So every time I go somewhere, I make a list of the people I want to meet. And then I just hang out with them and I try to spend really quality time. It's not just like go on a coffee, but like let's get lunch and then just go for a long walk. Or let's just sit together in a cafe all day and work together. Or if they have a family, I don't know, just go for dinner. And those things, they take... I'm in this phase right now because I'm in Germany right now visiting. I'm doing that right now and it's very rewarding. It takes a lot of time, but in the end I only see those people once per year. So I just make sure that I focus on this right now. And then I can go into my into my room somewhere in, I don't know, somewhere in the world and just keep grinding on my business, if that makes sense.
Totally, totally. And I think a lot of this has become, I'd say, more normalized because of COVID and people just not being able to see each other face to face. Honestly, for me, it's been like this as well, because, you know, even though I live in the border in Germany and I have friends in the Netherlands, mm-hmm. and I want to meet them, there were times when the border wasn't even open, so I couldn't meet them, even though we live like 30 kilometers from each other. But, you know, because of technology, it's become a lot easier to kind of keep tabs on the close friends or that you know, that list, the friends on your list, so to say. But yeah, interesting story. And I think a lot of people who are interested in like this digital nomad lifestyle, those would probably be some of the first questions they have. At least I did, because I'm pretty interested in the idea of it. But I think that's one thing I wanted to understand from you, is how you keep everything afloat.
Yeah, one tip I can give you, and that's like a big learning I have had in the last years, in the recent years, is that you need an address.
Yeah.
You need an address where you can get proof of address almost any time. And a lot of people just use their parents' address in their hometown. And that does work, but for me, it didn't work as I wanted. So what I did, I bought a flat. I can just recommend that to anyone who wants to seriously go digital nomad. Just buy a flat somewhere and then you have proof of address for a lifetime. That's the big hack. And you don't need to spend $100,000 for that. You can buy something for less.
Like a cheap place.
Yeah, exactly. You can rent it out. You can get some return. But I would really recommend that to anyone. And then the other thing is, I still meet people who are not getting that right, is the health insurance. It's insane to me. Some people still have no health insurance. So yeah, that's something. And it's not expensive either. It's like, I think $50 or $80 if you get some insurance with a high deductible from the UK, for example.
These are like global insurances that wherever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's not a travel insurance. It's like it's just a normal global health insurance. Yeah.
Ah, okay. Because obviously, when you have your business, you'd have to have some kind of address, and I guess that half of yours of buying a flat also helps you in terms of that.
Yeah, for sure.
Receiving mail and stuff.
Yes, it does. It does. Well, sometimes it doesn't matter. So if you want to register a company somewhere, quite often you actually don't need, you need an address, but they don't check it. You don't need a proof of address. But for example, if you want to open your store on Amazon or on Shopify, or I don't know, let's just say that, right? So those things, you need an address with a proof of address, meaning you need some kind of cadastral register entry or like a utility bill. So for those things, you need that.
One thing I'm quite interested in, after you mentioned, you know, what's it, like 5 different cities? Or what is it?
I think I have it maybe on my website that there's a text that says I lived in 7 cities. And those are the ones that I just mentioned. Yeah, the ones that I feel most familiar with.
What I'm thinking is like, what makes a city like a hotspot for digital nomads? Yeah. Is there particular criteria that, especially for these cities? For me, it kind of felt a bit random, but maybe there's like an underlying idea that kind of these cities kind of have in common that make it a place that you'd want to kind of spend some time in every year.
That's just preference. I mean, right now we have Wi-Fi everywhere.
Right.
We have coffee shops everywhere. You can have that anywhere. I mean, this is really just a matter of, I think where this comes from is digital nomad always have this side, I don't know what's the English word for that, like a side taste, or like a taste that comes with it, something like underlying meaning that indicates cheap, or indicates starting, or indicates freelance, right? I know digital nomads who make like thousands of euros every month, millions per year. So for those people, it doesn't matter where you go; they can pay a good hotel anywhere. But yeah, if you say a digital nomad hotspot, you maybe say that's a point where, I mean, a point with nice weather, maybe with good cafes, but I don't know. I find this is just a thing that comes after seeing how much you're able to spend and where you actually want to be and what languages. Yeah,
right. That obviously the languages play a big role, but no, also because when I hear digital nomad, automatically what pops up in my mind is Bangkok or Bali. I don't know why.
Yeah,
but I guess at least when you open up YouTube, probably you'll find like more people moving to these places for these reasons. But yeah, that was just a question out of interest.
I could for sure tell you that some cities are great to do certain things and meet other nomads and have great co-working spaces. But now it's 2021, and in every city you find something like that. If you want to learn more about this, my friend, he has a channel, Chris the Freelancer. I think he records a video everywhere he works, and that gives you a good overview.
Okay, yeah, I'll definitely check it out. Although I don't have any plans of that lifestyle, at least in the next couple of years. I want to really settle
why not?
Down here.
Yeah, why do you want to settle down in Germany?
Well, for one, as a Filipino person and a non-European person, it's just that our passports are not very strong. So it's really difficult for us to live in other countries as easily as it is for people from the EU or from the US or from Japan or wherever.
Okay.
So there's a lot of restrictions on that side of things. So maybe when there are less restrictions, then we'll see. But yeah, right now, like, that's a very big issue.
Oh, really? Okay. I'm just checking in passportindex.com.
Yeah, I think the Philippines is ranked in the middle, like in the middle of the world. Basically, that means if I'm Filipino, I want to go to Europe, I would need a visa to enter Europe, and I can only stay for like 30 days or something. And I have to show them like bank certificates, whatever, that I have money. The same if I go to the US, if I go to Japan, to like a lot of the developed countries, or just a lot of countries outside of Southeast Asia. Okay, if I wanted to be a digital nomad, I could easily like go to Vietnam. That's fine, or Thailand. Indonesia, but outside like that area, like there's a lot of restrictions.
Yeah, I just checked the Philippines passportindex.com. Oh, the whole world map is red for you. Yeah,
basically.
I mean, so it's what you could do. It's not cheap, but you could buy a passport.
I heard about
something
this.
like I'm not. It's not Barbados. It's something like Saint. I forgot the exact name of it.
San Martin or something. I know in Cyprus, in Malta, like these kind of countries, they also sell passports. But I like my current life here in Germany. Mm. At least at this point of time, I'm still enjoying my life. So no need to kind of rush. But, you know, that's a big stopper for a lot of people from outside, you know, developed countries to live like a digital nomad lifestyle. So yeah, I mean,
makes sense.
I think I've asked you a lot of like the questions that for me I wanted to know about your lifestyle.
Well, I'm here if you have more questions. I have time.
Definitely, but maybe you can tell us about your company and your podcast if you want.
Sure, the podcast is not launched yet, but the name is Random KPI. So you can go to randomkpi.com. We are interviewing agencies. So software development agencies or software entrepreneurs or project managers, product owners, as we are doing that basically right now. So my company now is doing software development again, like my first company, but we are now hiring globally. And so we are a bit different. And I just want to learn how other people are doing that. So basically it's a tool to do networking for me. You can check it out soon, randomkpi.com. I don't know exactly when we launch, but maybe when you air the show, then a month later or 2 months later. So.
And then your company, just so people have some background. Yeah.
Sure. Company is pairing.dev. Pairing, you write it like Bluetooth pairing. pairing.dev. We are, you could say, an outsourcing company. And we outsource full teams. So we hire teams of developers, full stack, Ruby on Rails, PHP, Java, and front-end JavaScript. And we pair them with a manager from Europe. And then the whole team gets rented out to companies who want to go heavy into development. So it's perfect for agencies who are already having some developers, but they want more workforce. They just want more development power. Yeah, so we work with long-term contracts, and we always work with teams. And we are still new. I mean, we started the teams this year. So maybe around a year old now is this structure. And it's been working really well. We get good response from clients. We get good response from the developers. Interestingly, developers really want to work for us. There's maybe something where I'm a developer myself, so they
respect you.
They do respect me, yeah. And then also they see that I have the best intentions to give the developers a good job. I think that might also be a big thing. Yeah. So it's been going quite well recently.
Sounds exciting, man. Sounds exciting.
It is.
Fingers crossed for your company. Oh, it's been really insightful.
Yeah, thanks. It was fun.
It really was a sneak peek into the life of a digital nomad. Well, a very established one to that fact, because a lot of the digital nomads these days are just starting the journey. So it's nice hearing someone like more experienced. So yeah.
Well, thank you. Yeah, sure. I can just tell everybody the most important thing by far is that you make money. I have, when I started digital nomadism, is that actually a word?
Digital nomadism.
When I started my journey, I just left my company and I didn't have a revenue stream. And this is not the smartest way to do. It is probably the hardest way to do and maybe the most dangerous way. But I wouldn't recommend that to anyone. So it's really about first making money and then you're free to do things. So if I could do it over again, I probably would have, of course, I wouldn't have wanted to stay in Germany, but maybe go somewhere else and then first really focus on making money. But this is life lessons, right? And also what I noticed, nobody really likes to listen. Nobody likes to learn. People only learn by doing mistakes and falling on the face. And that was the same with me.
Yeah. Life is the best teacher.
Yeah, true.
At least you've taken those lessons and now you're kind of achieving, you know, what you set out to do in the beginning.
Yes, it has taken way longer than I thought, but I'm on the path now. Yeah,
doesn't matter, man.
You know this thing. You do know this picture where it says success as you think it is, and it's like a straight line from like I want to go there, and then a straight line to the success. Do you know this picture? And then what?
Yeah, I know
what it really is, and it's like a totally, totally detoured way. Like it looks like a ball of hair.
I've seen this. I've seen this one. They also use it for like comparing countries, like bureaucracy in Germany versus bureaucracy in whatever.
Exactly.
And so then you have these like lines.
Yeah, totally. And that is so true. Yeah. When you look at this, you don't want to think this is true, but it actually is. It totally hits home.
Hey, Phil, thank you so much for your time.
Sure, it was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pop Your Cultural Cherry. You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast streaming platforms. To be updated with our latest episodes, don't forget to give us a like and a follow on our Facebook page and our Instagram account.